This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Sponsored by Saligi Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, Chesterfield Fence and Deck, and Budweiser.
Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
That's right, with you until 1 o'clock, and every weekday at noon, it is the Gas House Gang. Bernie Miklas and Chris Ranji today with you. We will talk to Jesse Rogers, MLB insider for ESPN. He's going to be on the show at 12:30 today. The Cardinals have an off day today. They're back at it tomorrow night, back home at Busch Stadium. Another interleague matchup. The Seattle Mariners are in town. And Bernie, good to have you on the show today. And I know that you love, more than anything else, controversy. And yeah, man, it just seems like a huge controversy that happened yesterday. And I don't mean to mock the people who are so up in arms about the what is called the Sunday lineup. And that is with three regulars who did not play in the game yesterday, a game in which the Cardinals lost and they dropped 2 of 3 to the Marlins. But this is the kind of thing that happens all the time, and it happens around baseball, and that is not exclusive to St. Louis. This people complain about the Sunday lineup all the time. Why do we still complain about the Sunday lineups, Bernie?
I don't know, man. I wish I had a good answer. I just listen, and I'm not one of these people who bemoan the existence of social media. Back in the day, when I hosted, I'm proud to say that I was the first sports columnist in America that hosted an online forum at STL Today, and it was a very busy place, and it was great. And I got in there and mixed it up with everybody. But anytime Tony La Russa started a funky lineup, usually he would do it in the middle of the week, but sometimes would, you know, before a scheduled off day, which is a really good time to do it, as Ali Marmol did, because you give your players 2 days off before they're entering a really busy stretch. Every time La Russa would do it, people would just go absolutely berserk. And he did it a lot. Tony La Russa, for all of the criticism of Ali Marmol, and that was the first time he did it this year, and I don't think we're going to see him do it all that much, but he'll pick his spots, as he should, because that's smart. For all the abuse he takes for this, I just laugh. I laugh my proverbial tail off, because Tony La Russa frequently did this. And some of his lineup concoctions were even like borderline bizarre. You know, he would play guys out of position and it was almost like Tony wanted to mess with people or something with some of the stuff he put together. So I'm not sure why every time it happens, there's a segment of the fan base that they think this is like the only time in the history of baseball that's ever happened. And it's really just stupid. I mean, I'm sorry, but it really, really is.
Well, I think it's what you said. It's people don't. All right. Baseball is it's the kind of sport that if you're watching, most likely you are really only watching the Cardinals. If you're a Cardinals fan, you're really only watching the Cardinals. That's because they play every day and you don't really have the time to watch your team play every day and then go watch other teams play every day.
Sure.
You know, in football, you could do that. There's one weekend where you watch your team's game and then you have the afternoon window. Then you have Thursday night football. Then you have Monday night. You have Sunday night. So you can watch other teams play and you can get an idea of what they are doing. But when you're only watching the Cardinals every day, you think, well, every mistake they make, they're the only teams doing it. That's the only team that's the only team that's putting together a Sunday lineup. But it happens everywhere.
It really does. I know tomorrow the Cardinals begin a stretch where they play 17 games in 17 days. That was a pretty tired team coming out of Houston, and a tired team, you know, even during the Miami series. To their credit, they grabbed the win in game two, and it would have been nice for them to win the series 2-1. But at what price? What price are we talking about? As I keep saying, and I know some people that have heard me or tire me of saying it, but I'm not sure when some baseball fans, not all, but some, they decided apparently that every baseball game, 162 of them, they are all Super Bowls, where there's a championship on the line every game and you have to play everybody or the world will end or something like that. I don't know what that is. Where baseball has always been a game where managers take care of their players because there's not only physical fatigue, and there are also guys who are not technically injured, like as in they have to go on the IL list, but they're really, really beat up. And the prudent, smart thing to do is to give them a break. And if you can do it because you have 162 games in mind, if you can do it before a scheduled off day, you get a double benefit. You give the you get the player 2 days off instead of one, and that can really make a difference. The other thing I've learned through the years, and frankly, I learned it again in this case, there is stuff going on that we don't know about. There's stuff that the managers don't reveal to the public. The managers protect medical or injury-related information. They don't disclose that. But there were three regulars that didn't play yesterday, Jordan Walker, Alec Burleson, and Mason Winn. Alec Burleson, if you watch the game on Tuesday night, Alec Burleson was having some discomfort in his lower legs, in the calf specifically. He felt the calf tugging at him, and he stayed in the game. But it clearly was something that the manager thought, you know, we got to be careful with this because we can't afford to lose him. Because if a dude strains a calf muscle, he's out for 3 weeks or a month. So he decided with this quick turnaround time yesterday, a noon game, roughly Miami time, it made all sense in the world to give Burleson the day off, and he was right. It's my understanding that Mason Winn, you know, had a situation where his back was tightening up a little bit. Once again, the manager made the decision. We need Mason Winn. We need to keep him healthy. We don't want something minor to get worse. This will be a good time to give him 2 days off in exchange for missing one game. And then with Jordan Walker, you know, Jordan Walker has been great, but Jordan Walker at the plate lately has been, you know, not quite as sharp. He's been chasing those outside pitches again. You know, in his last seven games, he's got a 43% strikeout rate. He looked like a guy that needed a mental break more than anything. And if we watch those games in Houston and Miami, Jordan Walker, all 250 pounds of him, and he can run fast. He's running around the bases like crazy, just going all out all the time, you know, breaking up, drawing throws, you know, forcing the defense to change, just making all these throws. Like, he was playing an all-around game with great physical exertion, but he was mentally tired. And again, people that actually pay attention to this stuff could see it in his recent games. So what would be the point exactly? I would like to ask all of these, Sparky Andersons out there, what exactly would be the benefit of continuing to run a guy out there who's mentally beat up and just needs a breather? You got 85% of the schedule left. Why do you want to kill players this early in the season, metaphorically speaking? How does that help?
Yeah, it doesn't. I think most people don't really think about a long baseball season. They hear it. They hear that phrase over and over again. It's a long season. You have to play for that. But I think in the moment, because you're invested, you're probably just not thinking 2, 3, 4 days from now, or even, especially not a month from now. It is absolutely true. Sometimes you take a couple of days because that might buy you another couple, 3, 4 weeks. And that's the whole point. You know, you might be punting on today a little bit, which still doesn't mean you're going to lose. It just means you've decided, okay, today is the day against this team on the road. We're going to give them this. We're going to give these guys a little bit of extra rest. And Walker is I'm glad you brought him up. Because this is somebody who is still, I mean, he just got off a 15-game hitting streak. So he was getting some results. The numbers were there, but the look of it, the feel of the at-bats is slightly different than what it was 2, 3 weeks ago. So it's just kind of something to monitor. It's not, I don't think, a cause for alarm at the moment. It's just something to monitor. And right. Aaron is watching us on YouTube and says, this is a throwaway season anyways. Well, I wouldn't go as far as calling it a throwaway season because it is still an important season. But I think what he's getting at is correct, that this is not a team that's supposed to win 90 games and win the division, and every game might count in a close division. This is still very much a transitional year for the Cardinals.
When they can take their best shot, they will. But when players are kind of beat up and it makes sense to give Alec Burleson, who had played in every single game this year, and you saw him in Houston running around getting his uniform dirty, belly flopping into bases, diving for ground balls. I mean, Alec Burleson, every time you looked, he was leaving his feet or charging into a base or doing something. That's a big man, and I think the big man was tuckered out a little bit, and that's why his calf muscle was tugging at him just a little. I personally think that a manager who would ignore that, no matter who the manager is, and put Alec Burleson back in the lineup after he had played every single game this year and he wasn't feeling right and there was something to do precautionary that would prevent a minor thing becoming a major thing, I think the manager would have been absolutely irresponsible to play him yesterday. And if there was something going on with Mason Wynn with his back, the irony, of course, is that me and others and many fans through the last couple of years, we say, you know, Mason Wynn plays too much. He gets hurt a lot. He's playing with injuries. He's got a lot of toughness. We admire that. He plays too much. He needs more downtime. He needs more days off. So you're the manager. You get criticized for, quote, playing him too much. And then when you give him a day off because you're concerned about a minor thing physically maybe turning into a major thing, you do the prudent thing. Well, you get ripped for that too. So, and you know, the Jordan Walker thing, I'm sorry, is great as he's been. There's certain things you can look at and you can basically see a red flag or you can see a big flashing light telling you warning, warning, warning. When a dude over the last week has struck out 43% of the time because mm-hmm. the quality of his at-bats has deteriorated because he's tired, that's a red flashing light. Give him a break. Just give him a little breather. That's the red warning light going off. And I think a smart manager will see that.
And when you now take into account that with this off day, the Cardinals will not have another one until May 11th. That's a lot of time. So they've got this Mariners series, the Pirates, Dodgers, Brewers, Padres. They're going to play all those teams before they get another day off. So taking advantage of these two in a row for certain individuals, I think, is a really good idea, and it will pay off down the road. And one more thing as we get to break here, Bernie, you talking about those forums that you moderated on STL today. I remember looking at some of those back in the day when people before Tony won a World Series here, the amount of hell he was getting. Oh my Lord. It used to piss me off because I'm like, guys, this is a good manager. What are you talking about? I know he's not Whitey Herzog, but that doesn't mean he's not a good manager. Just give it a bit. And then ultimately we saw that he was pretty good.
Hey, you know, real quick, you know what the most awesome thing that ever happened in Bernie's press box? And that was a lively place. It got huge volume and numbers. The craziest and best thing that ever happened was that Dave Duncan got on there. Oh. And he used a handle that you could kind of figure out. He like wasn't trying to hide per se, but it was something like DDPC18, pitching coach, because his number was 18 or something. And I said, you know, I think this is Duncan. And the fans thought it was Duncan, but I made sure our IT people could determine that it was Dave Duncan. He was in there for about a month just swinging. I mean, just trading punches with Cardinals fans. You know, I mean, that was an awesome thing. I did it and had a ball, although sometimes it drove me a little batty. But I guess, so, you know, I respect that fans are passionate. I really, really do. And they get upset. I get it. I'm like that too, even as a so-called media professional, wink, wink. But you know, sometimes you just got to back off a little bit and think about a bigger picture. That's all I'm saying. Ali Marmol did the right thing yesterday. The problem with that team yesterday, the guys who did play, who after all are paid professionals, there's only about 600 of them in the world, terrible at bats all day long, just absolutely terrible at bats. Like I wrote at STL Sports Central, they played that game like a team that was in a hurry to get to the airport. I mean, the first four innings of the game, the Miami starting pitcher, you know, he averaged like 9.5 pitches per inning. They were just swinging at everything. You know, they weren't grinding out at bats. They had seven of the nine innings, they saw 12 or fewer pitches. I mean, just they couldn't wait to get out of there. That's on them. That's not on the fact that the manager rested three guys who really needed a break. The guys who played needed to take better at bats, and they didn't, with a couple of exceptions. Nathan Church took great at bats, but there was a lot of kind of tired guys who were flat, and they just wanted to get out of there and go home. And you know what? That happens, too, over a course of 162 games.
Bernie Miklas, as we hit... Bernie Miklas, Chris Ronji, we will talk to Jesse Rogers from ESPN at 12:30. And Bernie, as you can imagine, some of the folks are not happy with us. The text message here to 314-436-7900 says this: I'm not even upset about a Sunday lineup. Your explanation, though, is stupid. Most of these young men yeah. are not so fragile. They need extra time off. Oh, no, a 25-year-old has to play 17 games in a row? Like, come on. You want to say other guys need game time or had a specific minor physical ailment? Then fine. But the idea these young men are so fragile they can't play 17 games in a row, give us a break. What do you think about that?
I would say I wish that person could talk to every manager who ever managed a ball club. They would vehemently disagree. Forget the media. Managers would say, you're stupid. That makes no sense. Human beings get tired no matter what they do for a living, and they play baseball, they get tired. A lot of it's mental fatigue. But at least I'll say that person touched on something. He did give an exemption, very gracious of him. He gave an exemption to players getting the day off who have some type of physical issue that needs to be attended to, which is why I explained two of the three guys yesterday who got the day off were dealing with some physical things. The other guy, Jordan Walker, was just mentally cooked at that point. He needed a blow. And if a 43% strikeout rate over the previous seven games doesn't provide enough evidence of that, I don't know what to tell you. So I love the passion of fans, but there's always been, is for my entire life, and I probably was like this too at one point. I know my dad was, where because they're athletes and they're making money, we assume that they should never get tired. They should never be fatigued. They should never be sore. They should never go to the manager and say, you know, my back's tightening up. I don't know. I don't want nothing to get worse here. And it's like Tony La Russa said a million times, men, not machines. I don't care that they play ball. I don't care what their age is. I don't care how much money they make. If they're beat up and they're physically tired, which all of them get in the entire major leagues, the managers, all managers will protect them and make sure to do the proper maintenance. Tony La Russa won more games than anybody except for one guy, Connie Mack. And Connie Mack had the advantage of actually owning the team, so he couldn't be fired. Tony La Russa won more games than everybody except for Connie Mack. Tony La Russa, oh my gosh, it's almost like it was yesterday. I would talk to him, Rick Hummel would talk to him, Jack Buck would talk to him, whomever, about these lineups that he would put together. That were like, what is he doing? This is like kind of funny. What is this? You know, and La Russa would say, look, I want my team to be fresh at the end of the year because this is going to be a dogfight in this division. It's going to be tough to get in the first place to get in the playoffs. It's going to be tough. I want my guys to be fresh at the end of the year. I'm not going to burn them out in May or June. Okay. It's as simple as that. I've been doing this a long time. I know the benefit of having a fresh team in late September. So I guess Tony La Russa was an idiot for having that philosophy. Okay. All right. If you say so. Thank you, Casey Stengel.
Bernie Miklas, Chris Ronji. Love it. We're going to come back and talk to Jesse Rogers, MLB insider for ESPN. We are with you until 1 o'clock here on KMOX.
There's a line drive down the right field line. That's fair and going towards the corner. Gorman rounds first base. He's headed for second, and he's going to be in there standing up. There's a good start to the top of the seventh inning.
Off day for the Cardinals today. They are back at it tomorrow. They will play against the Mariners here in town. And don't forget, Friday Night Live is back at Cardinals Nation. John Jay and Daniel Descalso will be there. That is tomorrow night after the game at Cardinals Nation. Used to be the Friday Night Live at Lowe's. Well, now it is Friday Night Live at Cardinals Nation at Ballpark Village. And that gets started after the Cardinals postgame show. We go to the guest line today and we bring in one of my favorite people, MLB insider for ESPN. Jesse Rogers is on the show. Bernie Miklas and Chris Ronji with you. How's it going, Jesse?
Good. Good to be with you guys. Sitting here at Wrigley Field, a beautiful day for baseball. One of the first in Chicago. So excited to talk to you.
So let me ask you about them because they are off to a start that is unexpected. I know it's only a month in, but they're supposed to win this division and they've played better lately. But are you surprised with where they are now in second place?
No, not really. I mean, I think they're obviously playing really well. They've won eight in a row. I mean, the first couple weeks of the season, you can't take much from that. You really can't take much from the first month many times. It's really teams like the Phillies, who the Cubs are playing today, or the Mets that are, you take more out of the ones that are really buried than you do out of the ones that get off to a good start. You know, the old saying, you can't win the pennant in April, but you can certainly lose it. So Cubs are fine. I mean, compared to some of the other teams like the Mets and Phillies have come through here. So, no, I'm not surprised by anything, except actually pleasantly surprised by how deep their offense is. I thought it could be, and it's proving to be that really scary offensive team that is actually 12 or 13 deep.
Hey, Jesse, Bernie, it's so good to talk to you, man. Anytime you join us, it's a great day. One more question about the Cubs. My gosh, Council is getting that pitching staff's just been getting annihilated with injuries. Not the rotation, but now lately the bullpen. Although they're going to catch a break, it looks like, with Palencia not missing as much time, their closer, as originally thought. But how have they done to work around that? And, you know, how much do you think that will affect them, some of these long-term injuries? Is it going to catch up to them in any way?
Yeah, no, both are good questions. They've navigated it with a great offense. Going back to what I said, they're top five in scoring and lately even better. So when you have a cushion, you can go ahead and pitch a B or C reliever and survive it. And that's exactly what's been happening. They've been scoring 5, 6, 7, 8, sometimes 10 runs a game in the last little while here. So that's, you know, the solution, right? Score enough that your bullpen is kind of taken out of the mix in terms of high leverage. So, but that won't last, obviously. So we'll see as they get guys back. Phil Maton should be back soon. He was a key guy. You guys know him down there. The second question is, look, Caleb Thielbar, their main lefty in the pen, is 39 years old. He's been used a lot. So the answer, though, is you back off him later on. Like, the need is now, so you're gonna rely on some guys now, and then you hope to have reinforcements and back off them later. So that's kind of how you do this thing. The problem, pops up when you continually abuse a guy, you know, month after month after month. Cubs are hoping not to do that as they get their walking wounded back.
On the other side of Chicago with the White Sox, they've got a player in Murakami who has, what is it, 5 home runs now in 5 consecutive games, who's just, it's been quite an explosion for him in the first month of the season. How much traction is he getting and how much attention is he getting in Chicago right now?
Yeah, a lot. You know, it's funny, though. He's hit a bunch of these home runs on the road. He hit the first three games of the series, of the season in Milwaukee. So there's 3. The last 5 have been on the road. So 8 out of his 10 just right there have been on the road. So it's kind of weird. You know what I mean? Like, you're seeing it from afar if you're a White Sox fan, but he's definitely gaining traction. I mean, he signed a 2-year deal, minimal type of money, not minimal, but, you know, $34 million for a slugging type player at this point looks kind of a cheap deal. And so a lot of teams are going to be kicking themselves. I mean, a lot of contenders, you know, are going to be kicking themselves about this if he continues on. You know, Chris Getz, the GM of the White Sox, said something to me that's so obvious because there were question marks about him coming over from Japan and whether he'd hit the velocity and stuff like that. And Chris's point was, yeah, we didn't know if he could hit velocity because they don't throw like that over in Japan. But just because he didn't see it didn't mean he couldn't hit it. Like, you have to project, you have to roll the dice a little bit. So turns out he can hit velocity. And so I thought that was interesting. Just because we don't see it there doesn't mean it can't happen here. And it's happening in a big way. I mean, that's the big thing. He's hitting velocity. We'll see if they just throw all sorts of breaking pitches at him, and we'll see what the adjustment's like after that.
Jesse, you know, being based in Chicago, I have to tell you this, brother, you know, for a long time, you know, the NL Central has been a laughing stock. Yeah, there were individual teams that gained a lot of respect, but the division from top to bottom, a lot of years was kind of a joke. And I know it's early, but it's been one of the big storylines early, the fact that everybody in the NL Central has got a winning record. I think they're the only division in baseball is the case. But let's go through the legitimacy test. Okay, and, you know, I'm going to ask you, can the Reds keep doing this? We talked about the Cubs. Can the Pirates end up with a winning record? Can the Brewers end up with a winning record? Can the Cardinals end up with a winning record? I mean, like, what's reasonable to expect the rest of the way?
Yeah, it's so interesting because I would have said no way a week or two ago, and then I see the Mets and Phillies up close. And I will tell you, there's holes all over these usual perennial NL East powerhouses. So we know the bottom of the NL West isn't that great. The Rockies and the Giants are just right. So the Marlins, like, you know, you look at the other divisions, maybe the NL Central can be this good. I will say the Cardinals and Reds are pitching and hitting in clutch moments so well right now. I wonder if it can last for both teams. You know, Cincinnati doing this without Hunter Green, doing this without really, you know, sort of big names in the bullpen. I don't know. I do like Sal Stewart and Suarez kind of adding to that offense. The Cardinals, again, pitching and hitting in such clutch moments throughout the month. Usually there's some regression there. So I think the division's going to be good, but maybe they're just going to end up beating up on each other. We haven't seen a lot of division games. So maybe you see a bunch of teams in the 80 to 85 win mark, and toss a coin up and flip a coin to figure out who's going to win this thing and get in the postseason. But yeah, I guess it can be much better than we ever thought it could be. Partly because I think the other two divisions are kind of just when I watch the Phillies and Mets, especially.
Yeah, speaking of the Mets, they're in last place in the division, and a lot is made of the payroll they have, which is an extraordinary payroll, but they're 8-16. They lost 12 games in a row. At one point, it was 11 or 12 games, and it's obviously not at all what they expected. So do you know what to make of the East?
Not really. The one thing I've noticed, I mentioned how the Cubs offense has stood out to me, is the exact opposite in that division outside of Atlanta. I'm not surprised by Atlanta. They got healthy in their lineup, not so much on the mound, and they're hitting the ball well. But, you know, these high-priced teams, we don't think about it as much as we should. There's so much money concentrated on a couple, three stars that you kind of forget. You only get to bat once through the lineup, right? One time through. Meaning, what happens when you get to numbers 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 in the lineup? Like, the Mets and Phillies do not look good in the bottom of their order. And then when, of course, the stars struggle, that you end up, you know, where you are with both those teams, obviously Soto out of the lineup. So, you know, I would assume the Phillies will turn it around offensively. Maybe I should assume the same with Soto back on the Mets. But, man, there seems to be some holes in those teams in the NL East. And so I don't know what to make of it. Let's remind everybody, April can be a season in and of itself. So in 2 months, we might look back and forget about all these woes with these teams and see the NL Central more normal looking, a couple teams under 500. But right now, it really is upside down.
Jesse Rogers from ESPN with us, longtime baseball writer. I had to ask you, man, you've been around a long time. What was your initial reaction when you heard that the Padres were going to be sold for $3.9 billion? The Padres, the 30th market size in Major League Baseball, or maybe not 30th, but they're down there in the bottom five for sure. How stunning is that, that price is going to be that exorbitant? And what does it mean, in your opinion, the upcoming CBA negotiations?
Yeah, no, I mean, we could go for a while on this topic. I had some mixed reviews. Obviously, it's a big number, but, you know, the league would probably tell you for every big number, there's a team, the Twins, that couldn't sell. The Angels had trouble selling, and he pulled it off the market. The Nats have had trouble selling. And if you look under the hood, I think even unbiased, you know, people that cover this stuff would tell you, people from the Wall Street Journal or whatever, the Padres are a little bit unique, the only team in town. It's the only entertainment thing in town. I mean, if you guys have been there, you know that now that football's moved on and all that stuff. So the one thing about the Pods and Peter Seidler and that whole group, you have to give them credit for, they built something up where now Petco Park is a place to be. 40,000 there, entertainment, fun, excitement, good team. There's no doubt that added to it. So I think it's a little unique. But also telling that a good owner can build their product up and increase their franchise value. So you're going to hear the union say one thing and the league say one thing about that sale. And so I don't know if either side's going to be able to use it to their advantage, so to speak. But certainly it was a big number. I just don't think you get that number in Minnesota or some of the other places. So, you know, that's kind of my feeling on it, a mixed opinion about it.
Yeah, that was really my question, is how does this affect CBA negotiations and, you know, the Mets with their huge payroll? And, you know, I don't know if owners will argue, we'll see, payroll doesn't matter. I don't know. I feel like all of these things could end up being a part of that discussion, and I'm not looking forward to how that's going to go, Jesse.
No, nobody is. Nobody is. They're digging their heels in. I think the league just feels like, if not now, when, in terms of a salary cap, we have our best chance. I mean, they're crossing their fingers, the Dodgers three-peat. That, you know, I feel like whatever polling you do of fans, every time the Dodgers win or sign a player, the polling for a salary cap goes up, you know, the positive response. So if some small market team wins the World Series, man, the league will not have much of an argument. It's really interesting how it's kind of the results in the standings will help determine the cause for the union and the league. And certainly the Dodgers winning the last 2 years has given the league some ammunition.
Jesse, thank you. You're great. We appreciate you. And we'll talk again soon.
You got it, guys. Take care, Bernie. Take care, Chris. See ya.
Jesse Rogers, ESPN, a Major League Baseball insider with us on the Gas House Gang.
And now back to the Gas House Gang.
Sponsored by Salinga Heating and Cooling. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, Chesterfield Fence and Deck, and Budweiser.
On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Just a few more minutes with Bernie Miklas. I'm Chris Ranji on the Gas House Gang. And Bernie, tonight, there is no Cardinals baseball. Rush Hour Sports, well, Redbird Rush Hour at 5 o'clock, then Sports Open Line 6 to 8. And you know what else is going on tonight? It's the NFL Draft. And I didn't always get into the draft. I find myself, the older I get, the more and more I get into it and am interested in it. Looks like Fernando Mendoza is probably going number one overall to the Las Vegas Raiders. And I know our very own Tom Ackerman says he's ready to become a Raiders fan now.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Their new head coach, Kubiak, is going to be ideal for him. And the one thing about Mendoza is that he ran a lot of RPO at Indiana and was very, very, very effective. So this will give Kubiak, who's very creative, a chance to put in some different packages for him. But the one thing that separates Mendoza from the others, from all the reports that I've read, and we saw it at Indiana, his numbers throwing deep balls, 20 plus yards through the air, phenomenal. And that really, there's no reason to think that that's going to change in a dramatic way in the NFL. He's also 6'5". He's got plenty of size. He's mobile enough. He looks a little gawky the way when he runs sometime, but as we saw in the national championship game, he gets it done. So, Chris, the question that's related to that, there's a big debate, or everyone's wondering about, because we've seen NFL drafts where there were so many quarterbacks drafted in the first round. Now there's a question of like whether there will, in fact, be a second quarterback taken in the first round, most likely Ty Simpson. But are we talking about before the 20th pick? It'll be like the 27th pick. I mean, it's kind of interesting because usually there's a big, big run on quarterbacks. And the nature of the draft has changed so much through the years where running backs are downgraded. And, you know, a lot of first round, second round picks are quarterbacks, wide receivers, pass protectors, pass rushers, everything geared toward the passing game. So the one guy that I think will be the exception tonight is our own Jeremiah Love, the Notre Dame running back.
Yeah, he might CBC. Go top three.
Yeah, CBC, Walnut Park. Great, great player. I hope he goes top three. I certainly hope he goes top five, but he might be the best overall player in the draft. At least that's what some informed people think. Well, with no respect to the quarterbacks.
Well, I mean, you know what the trend has been the last 15 years, I guess, about that teams don't really like to draft running backs all that high. So when it does happen, it's notable. So, I mean, if you're talking about a number three overall pick like him, and I forgot where Saquon Barkley went, it was pretty high in the draft.
Yeah,
that doesn't happen usually because teams feel like they can figure out a running game. They don't have to spend a high draft pick on a running back. But, yeah, I'll be curious to see if he makes it there. The Cardinals, right now, a lot of mock drafts have him going to Arizona at three. All right, Bernie, this was fun. Let's do it again next week. Yeah, we'll talk to you. You'll be on Rush Hour Sports tomorrow at 5, and then back with us on Gas House Gang Tuesday with Oliver Marmol, who's with us every Tuesday. It's been fun.
Thank you, brother, as always.
Bernie Miklas, Chris Ranji. If you missed the Gas House Gang, you know where to find it. Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcast, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter. It'll all be there as well. Dave Glover's show is coming up next on 104.1 FM KMOX.